adorning Christ and His gospel. Welcome to Abounding Grace. On behalf of Abounding Grace Radio, here is our teacher and pastor, Chris Gordon.
In Ken Sandy's excellent book on peacemaking, he has a whole chart in there on how people are to respond and how people do respond to conflict. And you have three different categories of response when there's conflict in somebody's life. You have peacemaking responses where you're making, helping people and pursuing avenues of making peace. You have another major category of attack responses. But then you have one of the more common categories of responses when there is conflict with people, and it is escape responses. Under that category, you have three different ways that people generally escape from conflict. The first and the worst, well, one of the worst forms of that, and that is suicide. Another kind of response to conflict is simply to live in denial of it, and you stay away from it and never deal with it. But then there is one that I believe is the most common. The single great response to all conflict, what is it? Flight. Flight. People run at times of conflict. I mean, it's in many respects, it's just easy, isn't it? It's easy. They never have to deal with the consequences maybe of sin that has happened in life. How many of you know people or have loved ones who've run during major periods of conflict? Maybe you've tried this. Running is especially prominent in those who are the offenders. It's just easy to escape when you don't have to deal with the consequences of your actions. And then wherever you're going, it always looks more promising over there. It always looks easier over there. It's a better path, it seems, over there, especially when you don't have to face the faces of those maybe whom you've hurt. All of us have tried this at some point in life. Maybe some of you are contemplating it. One of the things that people, though, rarely stop and think about when they're running, when there's flight in their lives, is about the fact that the one to whom their lives really matter, the one to whom they have to give an account, the one who tells us that He never leaves us nor forsakes us, the one who in all of our running we can never escape from, is there the whole way, seeing it all, knowing it all, so that ultimately no one is ever really running. And that's really an important point this morning, because studying the life of Jacob, we're at a point that which in Genesis here, that this is exactly Jacob's response. This is exactly mom's and Jacob's response to the great scheme, the great plot, the great deception that had taken place at their house under the tent. And in the scene before us, what you have is Jacob fleeing the terrible consequences of his sin. He arises from Bethel and he goes on his journey. And if you look at verse 1, we read that he came to the land of the people of the east, and he looked and he saw a well in the field. And behold, there were three flocks of sheep by it, for out of that well they watered the flocks. A large stone was on the well's mouth. Three flocks of shepherds are by this well. And there was this large stone. And when the flocks would be gathered, they would then have to take off this giant stone, and they would water the flocks, and then they would put the stone back. Jacob approaches all of these lazy shepherds. They're sitting around doing nothing. And he asks them if they know Laban. Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? And the shepherds say, yes, yes, we know him. He's well. And hey, look, Jacob, his daughter's coming right now. Again, you should all be seeing behind this, the Lord's working. So as the conversation is happening, here comes Rachel. She was a shepherdess. But the text is emphasizing here, over and over and over, appearance. Look down at verse 17. She was beautiful It doesn't just say appearance. She was beautiful in form. He's studying curves. Her form was lovely. Now, she wasn't one of these anorexic models today. Back then, it might make the women feel better. Heavier was okay. She was something. Beautiful in form. He gazes upon her. He's studying. Verse 10. Now, as soon as Jacob saw Rachel, notice this, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob's come near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his brother's mother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel. Now, I have never seen so much energy from Jacob. I mean, what in the world just happened? He's out rolling stones now? A man, the only energy I saw from him was the energy in stealing something. And now here comes Rachel and he's watering herds. And we are immediately being set up here because we see that Jacob now has a desire. Jacob has something driving him for the first time in life, doesn't he? Something has actually got the attention of Jacob. Driven by something, I'm getting her. The text is important because this scene should remind us of something that happened back in chapter 24. There's a direct comparison going on here. It's prompting us to make this comparison. Remember what happened when Abraham's servant went to look for a bride for Isaac? He comes to the city of Nahor. This is what we read. He made his camels kneel down outside the city by a well of water at evening, the time when the women go out to draw water. And what did Abraham's servant do? Let's compare Jacob and compare this. Oh, Lord, God of my master Abraham, please give me success this day and show kindness to my master Abraham. Behold, I stand by the well of water, and the daughters of men of the city are coming out to draw water. And what did he ask of the Lord? Make clear to me a woman of godly character, the one that you choose, O Lord. And before he had even finished speaking, there's Rebecca. This is the same scene, coming with a pitcher and on her shoulder. And he didn't make a hasty decision even then. He watches her and he studies, and he's not studying curves. He's studying what's important. And remember, he wouldn't make that decision. He bowed his head and he worships the Lord. Do you see the contrast? This man prayed. This man looked. Jacob? Oh, he's a self-made man. Given to sensuality, his life is totally accustomed to getting what he wants his way. He's like a young person who doesn't care at all about the right thing and securing a spouse that pleases the Lord, but purely given to how they feel, how the person looks. No regard to the spiritual state of whether this person is godly, whether this person is of the Lord, whether this person is the one the Lord wants them to marry. Jacob is full of the sensual. Being sensual means you're, boys and girls, you're governed by your senses. Whatever you feel. Jacob is the kind of mindset, you know, if you put your mind to it, you can accomplish anything. Well, all of a sudden, we have a new figure introduced into the scene. Jacob meets Uncle Laban. This was a greedy, money-hungry man, a schemer himself. And the text wants you to see, when he heard about Jacob, what happens? As soon as Rachel tells her father about Jacob, what do you read in verse 13? Laban hears the news about Jacob, his sister's son. He ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him into the house. Does that sound familiar? Here is a young prodigal running, and this father is running out to meet him. Running, embracing, and kissing. Where else do you find that story? Jesus had a whole parable about two brothers, a younger brother and an older brother. And remember what Jesus said? The father did, the good father of that parable? While he was still a long way off, this is when the younger prodigal came to himself, his father saw him and felt compassion, and he ran and embraced him and kissed him. Same thing. When Jesus started that parable, you know what he said about the young prodigal? That the young prodigal ran to another country. And what did the young prodigal do in the other country? He went and he hired himself out to a citizen of that country. He became a hireling. He became under bondage. And what then happened? Can you imagine the reception of the citizen of another country? He ran, he embraced, and he kissed, but with no compassion. Notice what happens here. We could apply some of this initially. When somebody is running from the consequences of sin and they don't see it, what are they running to? Well, they're escaping. And they're running because something else seems more promising or something else seems safe and it promises happiness and freedom and maybe somebody there who really cares. But it's not true. There may be somebody to greet you. But when we run from our consequences, you never really find relief. That's the lie we buy into. That when we choose to run in this life, we never find relief. And part of the Lord being with Jacob, part of the Lord saying in back in this previous section, I will be with you wherever you go, the Lord saying that is now to teach Jacob this lesson. Jacob is now under bondage to a citizen of another country, and he is a cruel man. Verse 15 describes it. Laban says to Jacob, well, he's been noticed it said previously that he had been there a month in verse 14. And so then in 15, Laban comes, and Laban's thinking, I'm not just going to host this guy. This guy's going to make me some profit. Why should you serve me for nothing? Tell me your wages. Laban is not gaining from Jacob being there. And so he's saying, I'm not entertaining you indefinitely. You're going to work. You are going to work. In fact, this is not fair work because Jacob is going to complain against Laban that Laban changes the wages 10 times and deceives him. Jacob says, okay, I will work for you 7 years for your daughter Rachel. Laban agrees. And it's kind of a romantic twist here. They only seem like a few days because of his love for her. He really, really loved Rachel. So verse 21. At the expiration of those years, Jacob comes to Laban and he asks for wages. In other words, he wants to take Rachel as his wife. He wants payment. He wants his wife. Give me my wife. I want my wife. In those days, there would be a long feast and there would be a big drinking banquet that would happen. So a normal wedding, you would have processions and you would from the bridal house, and then you would have a big marriage contract, and there would be the reading of the marriage contract, and there would be a large meal and a great celebration. And after the celebration, the groom would take his cloak and he would wrap. He would wrap his bride, who was veiled throughout the whole ceremony. He would wrap his bride in his cloak. She would then be, at the end of the ceremony, unveiled. Notice what happens. The feast must have been happening all day. Verse 23. It came to pass an evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to Jacob. He baited and switched. This is quite a moment. I was reading the other day about the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Any of you ever read about that? Bugs Moran and the Northside Gang of Chicago was a threat to Capone. And so they made a plan. They had a bootlegger who came in and lured in seven of Bugs's men into this warehouse. I mean, this is classic mob stuff in Chicago. Lured seven of Bugs's men into the warehouse, and two of Capone's men put on police officer uniforms, and numerous other men put on trench coats. And they came in and basically faked it as a police raid. And so they lined up, all of them on the wall, and shot them up. It was the greatest massacre, mob massacre in history of the U.S. Sheer deception, putting on a uniform and taking out. We say, those are thugs. This is Jacob and Laban we're studying. Sheer deception going on here. Think about this. It's wedding night. Wine has been flowing. He looks at Rachel in her wedding garment all day. He's gazing. And all of a sudden, at night, when it can't be seen, Laban takes Rachel's wedding garment and puts it on Leah. And in the darkness of the night, in the tent, the marriage is consummated. Jacob's blinded to the whole thing in the tent, by the way. First night of the honeymoon. So, verse 25, it came to pass in the morning. Behold, it was Leah. You notice the play in verse 17? She has weak eyes. Weak eyes. All night holding weak eyes. All night loving weak eyes. And in the morning, the sun, they walk out of the tent and the sun comes down. This is your Bible. One pastor said he probably called her by name 100 times. I love you, Rachel. Jacob's furious. Can you feel the anger? He comes out. He goes to Laban. What have you done? Here's the big moment. You deceived me. What does Jacob's name mean? Deceiver. I can't imagine what struck him at the moment. He not only has met his match, isn't this a little bit of deja vu? How so? Put it together. Providence has become really painful here. Jacob was the younger, and he deceived his father, who had weak eyes, by faking garments to become the older. And he deceives blind dad, steals the blessing. What just happened in this scene? The father, Laban, deceives Jacob by taking the blessing of the marriage of his younger daughter and putting the garments on the older daughter, who the text says has dim eyes, and deceives Jacob into marrying her and taking her. It was said to Jacob, the older will serve the younger. Your brother Esau will serve you. And now Jacob, the younger, has just served for the older. What a lesson. What a lesson. Even more boggling, mind-boggling, is that if you go throughout his history, his own sons will deceive him about his favorite son, Joseph, and they'll strip him of his garment and hand it back to him bloody, stained, where he lives for years thinking that his son was torn to death by a wild beast. As much irony and as much play as in this text, do you see the principle at work? You reap what you sow. Galatians 6, do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption. But he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. So, here's the conclusion. Let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. This is a powerful lesson this morning. It's a very powerful lesson this morning. It must have struck him like a ton of bricks. We read no complaint on the matter after this. And he works and works a deal with Laban to work another 7 years for Rachel. And that time was not like a few days. He now has an unloved wife. Uncle Laban worked him a good one, and this is a soap opera unlike I've ever come across. You know, I was thinking about this week. We often cry out in our lives for injustices of things happening to us. And we may say in our lives, why is this happening? Or why is this person giving me so many problems? Or why are people acting like this? Or why are they pursuing this against me? Or why are they treating us this way? Why are they treating my children this way? Have we ever thought to pause in the midst of conflict and ask if God is teaching us something about ourselves? You ever thought that the very personalities and people whom you don't get along with and can't stand most represent you? What a twist. They're showing the same characteristics in you, and that's why you can't stand it. The conflicts we face with people who may be leveling some injustice on us, maybe the Lord using these very things to teach you a lot about your own life. But here's what I love this morning. In this kind of chastening, it demonstrates the Lord's love. Why do I say that? What did the Lord say he was going to do for Jacob? The Lord said that he was going to bring him back and that he would never leave him nor forsake him. That means that this whole trial, this whole refinement, the Psalms talk about this being the Christian life being refined as silver is refined and tested as gold is tested. This is what the Lord's doing to bring him out with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm to teach generations of people what deliverance looks like. Israel would be able to study this. For the moment, no discipline, you know, all discipline seems painful than pleasant. But afterwards, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who've been trained by it. And God is committed to the project to sanctify you. God is committed to begin this work, and he doesn't leave sanctification completely up to you because this is what you would go do. And he takes it and works it for a wonderful master plan that he has. After this scene, guess what? You get a new Jacob. When he comes back and meets Esau, and he comes back through Bethel, you see a man being greatly refined. You see a man who's well being sanctified and treated by the Lord in a way that is chiseling him into the man that God has determined him to be. But God did something well beyond this. Do you know what the Lord did through this mess? Leah is the unloved wife, isn't she? Kind of grieve over that whole scenario. Verse 31, when the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, look at all this compassion here. He opens her womb. The Lord loves Leah so much. And what a message to those wives who feel unloved. The Lord loves you. He loved her so much that he looks on compassion and she bears Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah right then. Now, Levi would come from Moses and Aaron, right? When Moses and Aaron would come. Judah, the youngest of her four sons. What would he prophesy at the end of Genesis about Judah? A scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet. The royal line of David and Solomon, the lion of the tribe of Judah, came from this. Now, Lot's daughters in the cave was bad enough. Look at how the Lord works. The lion of the tribe of Judah, who is Jesus Christ, came from this. And from these two women, Leah and Rachel, came the 12 tribes of Israel. And God uses this whole deceptive scene, training Jacob on one end and building the house of Israel on the other. And notice what happens, to fulfill all of it, to fulfill his gospel promise to Abraham. And that their descendants would be as the dust of the earth. It's happening right in front of us this morning. And you stand back from this and you say, well, we are all schemers. We're all schemers. But look at what the Lord's committed to do through it. Let me close with one 2-minute reversal that you need to see. Last one. One day, a son of Jacob came to a well. Remember when Jesus came to the well? This woman was not attractive. She was a disgusting adulteress. She had been married all these times. She had 5 husbands. And here is a son of Jacob in whom really there was no deceit, sent on a mission to get a bride for himself, to purify a bride for himself, spotless and radiant, without any sin. That's glory. Give me a drink. What was the first thing that came out of her mouth? Are you greater than Jacob? Jacob rolled away boulders. Jacob watered three flocks. Are you greater? Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again, but whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst. But the water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life. This woman was a deceiver. And when Jesus tried to expose it, she still wanted to deceive. And you see, through our deception, it was our deception that pinned him to the cross. It was our lies against him that we crucified the Lord of glory. And yet God worked through all of our deception to send his son into this mess so that today you might be a bride purified, spotless, beautiful, radiant, glorious in his sight. That's an amazing gospel. Instead of running from him then, why don't all of us come to him, the author and finisher of our faith? Instead of a deceitful life, why not enjoy a life that is honest, coming home to a father who loves you, who has compassion, who runs and embraces and kisses and puts a robe on you of righteousness. He cares for you. And the Lord has said he only intends for you his best. That's the gospel of grace.
As always, we're thankful you take time out of your day to tune into Abounding Grace Radio. We hope these radio messages are a blessing to you. Do please visit us on the web at agradio.org. Again, that web address is agradio.org. Many resources there for you. And we produce these programs each and every week to bring to you the good news of the gospel of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for tuning into Abounding Grace Radio. May the gospel of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and all of his glory continue to richly bless you. We hope you enjoyed the program today on Abounding Grace Radio. I am Pastor Chris Gordon, the preaching pastor here at the Escondido United Reformed Church. If you would like to hear more of these teachings each and every Sunday, you can join us for worship 9:30 a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m. Our address is 1864 North Broadway here in Escondido. www.escondidourc.org is the website. The Escondido United Reformed Church, a place where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught.